Hello. Today I'm going to present to you information from two presentations I attended from the IRS Identity Theft Department about identity theft and what the IRS has done to work to prevent identity theft and fix identity theft issues.
Welcome to Tax Justice Warriors, the podcast that celebrates the work of low-income taxpayer clinics, focuses on tax controversy work, and looks at related issues in tax news. I'm your host, William Schmidt, the director of the Low-Income Taxpayer Clinic at Kansas Legal Services.
I will be going back and forth between two of these presentations, so I apologize if some of this information is repetitive. To begin with, in 2016 and 17, the IRS Identity Theft Department put in new safeguards. They stepped up password protocols, partnered with payroll industries for verification codes, worked with banks and financial institutions to recover refunds. They expanded efforts for business returns and added data elements up front. Now, successes from those efforts, the identity theft affidavits decreased 65% from 2016 to 2017. They confirmed identity theft dropped 57% from 2015 to 2017, 1.4 million to 600,000 cases. In 2017, the recovered refunds increased by 16%, and inventories dropped from 372,000 cases in 2013 to only 34,000 cases in 2017. However, in 2018, new scams began that refunds were going to taxpayer accounts before they were filed, and taxpayers would receive calls. So there were breaches of tax practitioners, data stolen from the 2016 tax returns. Returns were filed with the same data, bypassing IRS filters, and once identified, split refunds were used. Those incomplete returns had also been stolen from taxpayers, or taxpayers' computers were completed by fraudulent people and filed for refunds. Now, what the IRS is doing is they've improved their identity theft filters. They limited direct deposits that were filed by fraudulent people to receive refunds. So they are preventing those direct deposits from being claimed by fraudulent people, by criminals, basically. They have locked deceased taxpayer accounts, partnered with banks to identify suspicious refunds, and created identity protection personal identification numbers, and convicted more than 2,000 identity thieves. The IRS also has hosted a security summit initiatives. Within those initiatives, they shared data elements from the returns, required stronger password protocols, asked for more information, have W-2 verification codes set up on the W-2 forms, worked with banks, and expanded protections to the business tax return filers. They recognize phishing emails or contacts, people that pretend to be the IRS, e-services, or tax software or cloud storage providers. They warn people not to open a link or attachment from a suspicious email. The IRS will not initiate first contacts with tax professionals by email. They would like people to create security plans, especially the tax preparers. So they refer to IRS publication 4557. They would also like people to review their internal controls, with especially the tax preparers, to install and use anti-malware or antivirus software on all devices and update timely, to create strong passwords, the longer the better, to encrypt all sensitive files or emails, to back up sensitive data to a safe and secure external source, wipe clean or destroy any hard drive or printer that contains sensitive data, limit access to taxpayer data to individuals who need to know, check IRS e-services weekly for the number of returns filed within the eFin, report any data theft or data loss to the IRS stakeholder liaison that works with their area, stay connected to the IRS through subscriptions to e-news for tax professionals, quick alerts, and social media. They can also protect data by Again, mentioning creating a security plan, reviewing IRS publication 4557. You could hire a cybersecurity professional, but you can also review small business information security, the fundamentals at NIST.gov, using those best security practices at all times, strong antivirus software, security functions within the tax professional software, always encrypt and password protect the data, and using strong passwords, being aware of those schemes targeting tax professionals and clients, be aware of those phone scams where people are trying to impersonate the IRS or a taxpayer, that email tactics include phishing, account takeovers, remote takeovers, malware, or ransomware. Be aware of schemes targeting businesses, such as W-2 scams, where criminals will pose as the CEO or someone high up within a business and send a scam email to the payroll department. The payroll employee might then reply with a list of employees and their W-2s. If you do have a data loss, you can email dataloss@irs.gov, but those tax preparers should always monitor their eFin and eServices accounts. So don't fall for email scams from eServices. Check your eFin return use weekly. Check your P10 return use weekly to make sure that the numbers for what has been submitted match up with the numbers on your account. Should always know your customers. Use authentication to validate their identities, complete the information field, enter their driver's license if prompted to do so, use trusted customer information, do that with business filers, include the name and social security number of the return signer. Be aware of any anomalies that may pop up. So you can always provide resources for customers and employees. Publication 4524, Security Awareness for Taxpayers. So that lists some of the various information I've already provided, but keep your computer secure, avoid phishing and malware, and protect your personal information. Various tips there. Other resources include irs.gov/identity-theft, irs.gov/protect-your-clients. So that provides awareness. It's an awareness campaign for tax professionals. NIST.gov, that's small business information, and that provides the information I mentioned before, security, the fundamentals. FTC.gov and identitytheft.gov, those both provide the same information, but that is the leading federal agency for identity theft in general. Now, to detect identity theft, the IRS is constantly increasing the efficiency and effectiveness of its filters. Those filters are used to detect anomalies or variances in tax returns that may indicate potential identity theft. Filters are dynamic and can be programmed to look for identity theft in general or specific schemes. Taxpayer notification, a suspicious return generates letter 4883C or letter 5747C. Letter 4833C allows taxpayers to verify their identity by phone or in person. With letter 5747C, taxpayers must authenticate in person if they did file the return. And with that same letter, the taxpayers do not need to verify in person if they call and say they did not file the return. CP-01E is sent to taxpayers who may be victims of employment-related identity theft, and CP-302 is sent to taxpayers who have tax information requested through the Department of Education's IRS data retrieval tool. Again, ways how you can help. If you are a tax preparer, the client returns are rejected, saying that the returns have already been filed. Clients that haven't filed get refunds, authentication letters, or tax transcripts. They can gather that information in order to verify what is happening with their tax return. If a tax preparer's number of returns filed exceeds their number of clients, and if their computers are impacted, so running slow, the cursor starts moving on its own, or network computers begin locking up. You can also know the warning signs of potential identity theft. The e-file return is rejected because of duplicate social security numbers or returns. There is a notice from the IRS about a suspicious return. Paper refund for a return is not filed. The unrequested tax transcript shows up in the mail. Notice of adjustments for credits or expenses not claimed. Notice of levy or liens or unexpected balance due, especially on unfiled returns, or a notice that the Department of Education tool was used. So contact the IRS in case of a data loss. Notify your IRS stakeholder liaison, or you can look up data loss information for tax professionals. Again, irs.gov/identity theft. A individual who has identity theft, use the Form 14039 from the IRS. That is fillable on irs.gov, so check box 1. You can attach that to a paper return to mail to the IRS. Use the compliance notice address. The form can be submitted electronically, and they eliminated the extra documents required for submission. No 14039 is needed if a person is already in the IRS process. They will do research to authenticate the taxpayers. The taxpayer receives a notice or letter once the form is received, a CP01S with a return, or a 5073C if no return was included. The IRS works to resolve any issues that are impacting the taxpayer's account, and the taxpayer will receive a notice or letter once the case is resolved, a CP01 if it is tax-related, a 4674C also if it is tax-related, or a 4401C if it is not tax-related. The IRS will place an identity theft marker on the account. The IRS uses a variety of identity theft markers that are placed on accounts when a valid claim of identity theft is received. The markers identify current and previous victims so that the IRS can provide a variety of protections, such as the IP PIN, the Identity Protection Personal Identification Number, transcript limitations, or notifications as needed. The Identity Protection PIN is a 6-digit number that is provided to identity theft victims on the form CP01A. The new number is provided each year in December, making the prior year's IP PIN obsolete. The active number must be used on all 1040 series tax returns filed during the year. However, that is not required on the Form 1040X if they are amending a tax return. If not received, the taxpayer can create an account at irs.gov/getanippin. So that's GETANIPPIN. To retrieve their current IP PIN. Currently, that is rolled out for Florida, Georgia, and Washington, D.C., that people are notified they can opt in for an IP PIN, but only 6% of those areas are using that. The IRS should be expanding the IP PIN state ranges in the future. Transcript access protection is being limited, that only taxpayers themselves are allowed access to transcripts for years with an identity theft indicator. Tax professionals and power of attorney holders may now access transcripts for those years without an indicator attached to it. The transcript information is no longer visible through the Department of Education IRS data retrieval tool. Necessary information flows directly into the application. In all cases, advise taxpayers to take action, protect their personal and financial information, to check bank accounts, contact one of the credit bureaus, request their credit reports to review their credit information. They can contact the FTC at identitytheft.gov for additional protection information and additional steps to take, and that they should report the tax-related identity theft to the IRS using Form 14039, the Identity Theft Affidavit, checking box 1. They will need to prepare a return by paper and attach the form to the front of the return if they're needing to file a new tax return. Unless a letter or notice of levy was received, they would then file the paper return at the IRS campus based on the taxpayer's geographic location. I would note also there is IRS publication 5293 that is geared to tax professionals. It is a data security resource guide. protect your clients, protect yourself. It lists information what a tax professional can do, how to learn the signs of data theft, how to stay vigilant. If data is lost or stolen, how to report it quickly, how to stay connected, and various IRS resources. Now, going back over my notes, an identity protection personal identification number, IP PIN, is set up if a individual is sure. The IRS will verify that they will send it out if they have a good address for a taxpayer, and they do not set that up if they are unsure about the address. They want to make sure that does not go to fraudsters. The identity theft hotline is 1-800-908-4490. Another sample letter from the Identity Theft Department is letter 4674C, a status update letter. For the IP PIN letter where you would receive the CP01A, if you move, you want to make sure the IRS knows so you can go online or call to update the IRS, but it is best to go online. In updates on how long the cases take, they work the cases, so it takes a lot of research. They compare the last three returns. Before, it had been 240 days. The two sources with the presentations, one was saying it was under 120, perhaps 60 days, but the other source was saying an average of 120 days of processing identity theft affidavit. It can be problematic when taxpayers lose their new IP PIN number, that they get a new one each year. So again, be sure to inform the IRS each time you move if you have an identity theft PIN number. If a taxpayer is filing a tax return with a form 14039, they should always be aware that there will be a delay in processing, so not to expect that their return will be reviewed quickly. And I wanted to mention, just going back over the two main types of identity theft, I have touched on them a little bit so far in this discussion, but the refund-based identity theft is when an individual files a tax return using someone else's social security number to steal a refund. This is a time when a person may receive a notification that they've already filed, that they may have claimed other dependents, that people that they don't know about, and they will receive a notice potentially from the IRS saying that they've already filed and their tax return that they're submitting is incorrect. This is a big warning sign to fix issues with the IRS and notify them about identity theft with the form 14039. The other main form of identity theft for a taxpayer is income-based identity theft, that if someone else is working using an individual's social security number, then later on when they're filing a tax return, they wouldn't be reporting that income on their tax return because they didn't know about it, and they would likely receive an audit by mail from the underreporting department of the IRS saying that they did not report all of their income. So again, using form 14039 to submit an affidavit regarding identity theft to the IRS. They may need to work with the Taxpayer Advocate Service as well to verify that they could not work at that other location while they were working somewhere else. That is a case that I have worked with Taxpayer Advocate Service out of Wichita, that they provided great assistance to show that the taxpayer could not be in two places at the same time and there was identity theft going on. I hope all of this information on identity theft is useful to you, whether you are a tax preparer working with tax controversies, with tax preparers who might have identity theft, or a tax preparer who may need to prevent any data theft. I hope this information was useful to you, and please tune in next time for another discussion here at Tax Justice Warriors. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for listening to Tax Justice Warriors. We have a Patreon page if you'd like to support this podcast. Providing monetary support for this podcast helps with expenses like equipment or travel to tax conferences. Supporting this podcast through Patreon comes with rewards, so check out our Patreon page. Please rate or review this podcast because positive reviews help get more people to know this podcast exists. The views expressed on this podcast are not official opinions of the IRS, the Low Income Taxpayer Clinic program, or the employers of the people who spoke on this program. Your tax situation is unique, so do not take the statements on this program as tax or legal advice. Consult with your own tax professional to provide you with specific advice on your situation. Tune in next time on Tax Justice Warriors for another interesting tax discussion.